Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And good evening. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and this is episode number 88. And tonight, there is no Mr. Stephen Gies, at least not in the studio. Stephen is still recovering from neck surgery, so he will probably be back next week. But he will join us here on tonight's show via a pre-recorded set of lessons. The first one is going to be on creating characters. And the second one is on writing realistic dialogue. So stick around. We will have some really cool stuff at writers or aspiring writers, as some people refer to themselves. This is a great time to learn some cool stuff, some cool new tricks. And like I said, stick around. We've got a couple of things I want to announce here. Jenny Wong, the author of Girl, Where's Those Shoes? Her book won a 2022 The Book Fest Award, and we'd like to say congratulations to her. And she's up for a couple of other awards as well, so we will keep you informed on that. I am currently working on the audio version of this book, Girl Wears Those Shoes. So keep your eyes and ears peeled on our newsletter for release info on that. And if you want to know how you can get our newsletter, this is how.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What? Yeah, okay. Also, Robert G. Willis-Croft's Ort Federation to the Stars is out, so get over to Amazon and get your copy. Fantastic book. We're working on the audiobook for that as well, and that's going really cool. Lots of fun little neat stuff involved in that one. And Patricia A. Guthrie's Eerie Charms of the Short Story is still in pre-sale until April 14th, so get over there, get your pre-sale copy, help boost her ranking on Amazon. That's what that does when you get the pre-sale, so that's always a cool thing to do. Support your indie authors, and she's a really fine author. I'm telling you, I edited this book, and Patricia is she's a phenomenal storyteller. So get over there and grab the pre-sale of Eerie Charms of the Short Story by Patricia A. Guthrie. And if you want to take part in tonight's show, here's the thing. I'm not going to be able to take the calls immediately, so once these audio tracks that Stephen's going to be teaching on. Once those are done, if you've got questions or comments about something you hear in there, give me a call or give me a call and just I'll keep you on hold during it, or throw out some tweets. If you've got questions or comments on Twitter, put them out there on Twitter and I will take care of that as well in between the two audio clips. So if you want to call or tweet, here's how you do that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right. Fantastic. Yeah, well, I'm going to kind of bump some of these out of the way here because these video clips are going to be... they're going to run nonstop for, 20 minutes. So just keep listening. Now, if you do happen to miss an episode of this show, any one of our episodes, if you've missed any in the past or there was a favorite that you want to revisit, check us out in the archives.
If you miss a show, find us in the archive in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. That helps us out. Now, there's a couple of things here on Twitter right now. I will get to this right now since I won't be able to when these audio clips files start moving. Marlena Smith, thank you. She's out there promoting the show. And tune in to the Voice of Indie podcast going live now, she said. We appreciate that very much, Marlena. Every week, you're usually here. So appreciate you. Dr. Helen Burrell says, learn from multi-gifted Stephen Gies, writer, musician, pubber. He'll lead you to pubbing success. Prevent creative gaffes with his terrific tutorials. See reviews of his charming Comes This Time to Float short stories at Book Bites by Burrell. That's BookBytesBYBOREL .home.blog. So thank you for that, Dr. Helen. And Verwayne Greenhall, he's out here. He says, we are having a lightning storm just north of us, causing our power to an interrupt drop. If I'm unable to listen live, I will catch the replay. Please send Verwayne. Well, okay, we just played that archive, so this is a perfect situation to hit that archive when you get your stuff back, Verwayne. Thanks for listening every week, as you usually do, and thank you to Lisa as well. And Marlena Smith said, glad to be tuned in, Beam. Well, we're glad to have you here. Now, we are going to play a next week we are having Andrea Wingler, a.k.a. Wingler. She wrote a how-to book on setting up a food truck, and she's going to be our guest next week, but we've got a brand-new commercial for her, so we're going to go ahead and play that one right now before we get started on Stephen G's teaching.
With good jobs so hard to find, especially in rapidly expanding Florida, owning your own food truck could be the best option. It's the least expensive startup, and you can be fully operational in mere months. The rules and regulations can be a bit complex, and no single source has offered all the answers. Until now. How to start and run your own food truck business in Florida by food truck veteran A.K. Wingler is the step-by-step guide that takes you from good idea to great success. Sure, it's hard work, but exciting, mobile, flexible, and highly profitable. And you get to be your own boss and set your own hours. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, this book tells you how and where to make money in this exploding independent industry. Grab your copy in laminated hardcover, glossy softcover, or any of the major ebook formats at retailers worldwide. Even if you're just curious for now, this guide is the best way to discover if a food truck business is right for you.
All right, so that's our guest for next week, A.K. Wingler, and this is a really cool book. We just did a video for it, so keep your ears open for that. I'm going to jump into the first one we're going to do is Stephen G's teaching on creating characters. So here's your chance to learn how to create those kind of characters that come alive and come off the page. And there's all kinds of really cool techniques that he knows, but I'm going to quit gabbing and let Stephen teach.
Quality story writing requires finesse when conceiving, developing, and portraying the souls who populate your tales. In a way, they are your dependents, relying on you to make them so real they live beyond the pages. You and anybody who meets your characters must come to know them intimately, even the ones nobody likes. Characterization will prove to be one of the most rewarding aspects of crafting your story. In short fiction, characters might be kept simple, with only a few of their more interesting and relevant dimensions revealed. They might even be abstract, representative, intentionally cliché, or depicted as non-humans, such as animals or plants or aliens. However, human or not, the longer they work and the more involved their roles in the plot, the more complex your characters must be. The process of writing fiction, especially longer tales, requires you to invest time living with your characters. You expect your readers to spend many hours with them and to make emotional commitments to them. Your characters must make us care about them, even the ones we want to see fail. Thus, a successfully drawn bad character is deemed someone we love to hate. Don't let weak characterization dilute a great story. Don't rush headlong into plot thinking you can just make up characters as you go, letting details about how they think and act be dictated by whims of convenience and necessity. Investing a large part of your preparation time in characters will enhance the quality of all your stories. Preparing to write a novel is never linear. You cannot plan elements such as plot, point of view, narrative voice, or character as you write. The interaction between character and plot especially requires that both be developed in tandem. Plot tends to be driven by its characters, with what happens next depending on how the players behave. Otherwise, you risk your plot feeling contrived. Like all people, your characters feel, think, and act based on who they are, their backgrounds, experiences, beliefs, motivations, fears, needs, goals, and more. Nearly all novelists keep detailed notes, even if only mentally, on plot, sometimes outlining extensively, often at least listing important elements needing attention at key points in the plot. Characters deserve similar effort. If you keep and arrange notes for plot, try doing the same for characters. Continuity and consistency depend on keeping track of data such as ages, dates, locations, origins, experiences, skills, limitations, and more. A woman from Akron who somehow transforms to a woman from Dayton by the end makes her creator look amateurish. A scene in which your hero is afraid of snakes merely because the plot calls for it does not mesh with other scenes in which he slogs through swamps without worrying about them. An old saw about plotting is that if your character reaches for a gun in the drawer during Act 3, you better put that gun in the drawer in Act 1. Otherwise, the story will feel contrived, the gun too convenient, too lucky. The same is true of character traits. For example, if your hero needs to escape through the swamp, you can plot obstacles and drama by making him terrified of snakes, but that fear should be set up. Why is he afraid of snakes? Only snakes are all critters? How does he deal with snakes? You need to devise a way to show it earlier in the story. When you finally put him in that swamp, your audience will understand and even identify with who he is and what he's going through. Put the fear of snakes in Act 1 so it's there when you need it in Act 3. Considering plot helps you create characters whose feelings, thoughts, and actions drive your story. It all starts in characters' heads. Physical attributes matter, but some writers appear to agonize more over precise height and hair color than way more important motivations and other psychological characteristics. Whatever you want your character to do, a sure bet is that not every real person would want to do the same thing. More so, of those who would, the reasons they might act a certain way will vary widely. Other factors will vary as well, such as reasons they might struggle with not wanting to do something, their confidence in accomplishing it, their concerns about failure, and any number of other mental factors too numerous and complex to try listing here. Yet, for your character or characters, you do need to consider them all. Then, for whichever matter most, you should incorporate them not only into plot, but into the specific behaviors, thoughts, and point of view. Sure, how one keeps his hair cut might matter, but whether or not he'd risk his job to help a friend probably matters more. A character whose psychological makeup feels cobbled together for the convenience of plot won't feel real enough to earn readers' empathy. Beware psychological stereotypes. Popular storytelling is rife with cliché characters given standard backgrounds and experiences as justification for attitudes and behaviors. Not every crime crusader was a victim of serious crime, nor does every crime victim become a crusader. Avoid relying on cliché character psychology. Next up, toss the cookie cutter, please. Some authors are tempted to mimic popular stories. Others rely overmuch on their favorite characters from a lifetime watching and reading. If you truly create original characters, you can likely avoid the common criticisms that the inhabitants of your tales are cardboard, cookie cutter, or out of central casting. Cardboard characters are flat, lacking layers to be revealed. Cookie cutter characters are too much like other characters in the same story, in other stories, or in other writers' stories. Central casting refers to the old Hollywood movie studio system where character actors were kept on payroll. Writers were expected to use this pool, which often reduced characters to blurbs. The grandfatherly old man whose gentle drunkenness can flare into rage. The busybody, middle-aged woman who gets confused easily. The dumb muscle man who's always eager to fight. I'm suspicious of authors who fantasy cast their tales with movie and TV stars, especially before they've even written the roles. This fills in a lot of detail readers might not know, and it discourages the writer from improving characters with radical changes. No matter how well I know my characters at the onset, I always know them way better by the end. And sometimes they're very different than I expect. They don't make a cookie cutter that can do that. Be sure to include uncommon flaws. No matter how complex you make them, over-idealized characters tend to feel fake, and they rarely generate reader enthusiasm. Even superheroes are deeply flawed. Infuse your characters with shortcomings, internal conflicts, contradictions, weaknesses, whatever makes even the most powerful ones somehow vulnerable. Avoid allowing your characters to possess much more skills, knowledge, and temperament than are needed to achieve the story's goals. Making characters too good reduces tension. Better still, rendering them apparently unable to achieve their goals allows you to turn their flaws into plot obstacles, and it makes readers wonder if or how they can possibly succeed. More intriguing than waiting for Lance to slay the dragon is first watching him overcome his fears to learn the sword-wielding skills that proved elusive all his life. So plan your character changes. The essence of most stories is the way their characters change. While the obvious plot appears to be about an external goal and its obstacles, the core usually builds around the character's internal conflicts that must be resolved in tandem. For the protagonist, that could mean becoming a better person, learning a lesson, changing his or her views, and/or making wiser choices for nobler reasons. Resolution of the internal conflict often alters the external goal, sometimes even rendering it moot. Protagonists can succeed so well they're about to take the final step toward achieving their goals, yet they choose not to complete that quest because the psychological change is really what the story is about. For the antagonist, it can mean becoming a better person, but it can also mean acting worse, then suffering for the wrong choice. Antagonist change can be toward becoming a better person, or it can be for the worse, which is a great way to keep adding surprise complications to your plot. Be sure your plot explains why characters change. Do not assume everyone has the same values. Maybe she changes because otherwise she would lose her job. Or maybe it's because she's finally willing to sacrifice her job for something she values more. Either choice requires understanding why. Money, security, opportunity, fulfillment, independence, retaliation, need for approval, workplace stress, geographic preferences. Why would she choose now what she would not have chosen earlier? Character change can appear to be the main goal, or it can emerge gradually as the story develops. Complete change is rarely necessary. Usually taking the first step toward change proves sufficient. In many stories, resolution of the external conflict winds up being after the climax, showing dramatic character change. Plan for this while creating your characters. Organize your character details while you are working on your plot. Now, develop point of view. Carefully consider how each character uses his senses. How does he interpret that information? For example, are verbal threats perceived as dangerous or pathetic? Do they trigger amusement, disdain, sympathy, or urges to retaliate? Does the odor of gunpowder trigger fond memories of playing with firecrackers as a child, or does it trigger terrifying associations with military combat? Does the din of a crowded space make her feel intruded upon or reassured? Are intrusive airport searches violating her freedoms or keeping her safe? Develop point of view based on each character's history, background, life experiences, geographic and socioeconomic origins, whatever matters to the story, and then some. An urban girl from the hood and a country girl from the dairy farm bring different points of view to their first day sharing a dorm room, but do not let those differences prove to be what everyone might expect. Maybe the urban girl has trouble adapting to the dorm because all her life she's felt crowded and lacking privacy. Or maybe she's uncomfortable with the lack of friends and thus tries to surround herself with a group. The country girl could be the cliche rube coming to the big city. Or maybe she's used to negotiating with distributors on behalf of the family farm, and she's grown very slick at handling people. As you continue adding dimensions, be sure to consider degrees of awareness. One of those young ladies might notice details the other misses. Include inward versus outward perceptions, prejudices, assumptions, values, and priorities. In developing point of view, expect each character to be both shaped by and be a shaper of his environment. The arrangement of that dorm room will reflect the point of view of both young ladies, as will the nature of their interactions among themselves and with visitors. Maybe one will learn tolerance while the other is pushed to the breaking point. Maybe one will feel stressed that a few items are out of place, while the other feels stressed that everything else is unusually neat. Spend some time living in the dorm with those two, so to speak, and readers will believe how you ultimately decide to immerse them in your plot. You understand your characters better than they understand themselves. You also have the benefit of knowing what they will experience, how they will change, and how their plot will play out. You must decide how and how much your narration will reveal their interior selves. For example, you create a young woman named Tiffany who continually fails in relationships, always sabotaging herself by growing bossy and controlling at the point her partner begins to show interest in long-term commitment. Although this might be obvious to readers, you must decide how much she understands this, including her level of awareness and how she interprets it. Does she recognize what she does? Does she want to change it? Does she blame her partner? What could make her finally understand the problem? At the level most removed, the writer understands what Tiffany is doing, but Tiffany does not. This is usually easiest to portray if the narration reflects the point of view of a different character who observes and interprets. A closer level still provides a different character's point of view, but includes Tiffany's awareness. Closer yet, the narration directly reflects Tiffany's own point of view, but that still requires deciding her level of awareness and understanding. The plot might clearly show readers Tiffany's external behaviors, yet also allow them to be privy to Tiffany's internal denial, justification, her misinterpretation, or even her obliviousness. Listen to each of your characters. Don't decide too easily. Experiment with different ways of speaking. One option is to use the same words and hear them said differently. But don't forget, as you keep refining a voice, you'll find yourself refining the wording that character would naturally speak in your scenes. Decide on catchphrases, patois, diction, slang, propensity to sound excited or bombastic or snide or timid or brash, and more. Practice winnowing speech for conciseness without sacrificing flavor. Rehearse mentally, as if running lines for an acting role. Fiction writers who shortchange this process often discover later that characters have gradually altered how they speak, whether from character changing or from the lack of characterization making them default to sounding like the narrator. Avoid stereotypes unless you intend to stereotype. Avoid cuteness unless you intend to sound cute. Strive for memorable without overdoing it. Avoid having more than one character's name start with the same letter. Seriously, think of how you try to remember a name. You recall how it starts. It starts with an M. M something. Readers might confuse similar names, especially if they begin with the same letter. Keeping Jim, Jack, and John straight is more challenging than remembering Jim, Kevin, and Billy. Now, respect your characters. Now that we've considered a basic approach to creating well-developed characters, you should be able to see how to build on these points. Set high expectations for the souls you create, but respect them enough to let them be who they are. If that doesn't work for your plot, either plot or character, probably both, need more work. Never let your characterization fall short. Readers who empathize with believable characters are way more willing to go for the ride that is your plot. In the end, you'll be responsible for the care and feeding of these fictional people who seem so real. You will miss spending time with them when the story is finished. Just remember, if any of them want to borrow money from you, don't fall for their story. They might have made it up. Isn't making up stories what you do?
All right. So, there you go. That's Steven's tutorial on creating characters. Now, before we move on to the next one, Steven has this great website, gswriter.com. Go over there. There are all kinds of how-tos, tutorials. He's also got other authors over there sharing with everybody what works for them and what doesn't work for them and ways to get around certain things. And there's just all kinds of really cool stuff over there. So gswriter.com, that's the go-to place. Everything that Steven teaches is part of a series of how-to books called G's Writer How-To. And all of those are available on Amazon. There's dialogue, there's point of view, there's creating characters. It's just, I mean, there's a whole bunch of really cool stuff there. There's books on how to get published for those who are still working on that angle. So get over to Amazon and look for Steven G's Writer How-To. And speaking of G's Writer How-To, anybody who calls in tonight, now when this next clip is running, I won't be able to answer the phone, so I get that out. But anybody who calls in tonight, I will get your information and give you a whatever copy of the G's Writer books you would like. There's, like I said, dialogue and point of view and all kinds of cool stuff. So we'll do a giveaway for callers or even on Twitter. If you don't want to call in, hit us up on Twitter. We will get a hold of you and give you your choice of whichever Steven G's G's Writer book you want to do. So keep that in mind. Now, speaking of the G's Writer how-to books, we've got a brand spanking new ad for that. So let's listen to that before we jump into our next one. Will be realistically speaking. So this is where you're going to learn a little something about dialogue. But here's the ad for the G's Writer How-To series.
Hey, writers and assorted storytellers, expand your skills with the G's Writer How-To series. Longtime publisher, author, composer, and producer Steven G's launched this growing series as a companion to the G's Writer Author Resources website. The first installments include indie publishing, point of view, outlining, narrative, and dialogue. Each is packed with 35 to 50 pages of practical advice, contemporary standards, and publishing practices, and step-by-step challenges helping you develop your skills. Each includes practice assignments at the basic, intermediate, and advanced levels. They include examples you can see and study, even as you practice enhancing your own material. Check out gswriter.com and find the G's Writer How-To Series eBooks at Amazon. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group and Steven G's, the G's Writer How-To Series is for serious writers who never stop striving for innovation and finesse in their best works. G's Writer How-To.
All right, reminder here, and we're doing a giveaway. So if you would like one of those G's Writer How-To books, hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter and say, hey, I would like one of those books, and we will take care of you. Or if you want to wait till after the next audio clip is played, give me a call and I'll take care of you that way. But hashtag Pricing Group over on Twitter. And over on Twitter, Marlena said, such a great segment on characters. Yes, it was. And we've got another one coming up here. This one is about, realistically speaking, dialogue. Dialogue is such a cool thing in stories. When people know how to do dialogue, the story is just that much more real. And Stephen knows how to do dialogue. So without any more of my babbling, I'm going to introduce you to Stephen Gies, GiesWriter.com. Get over there and check it out. This is Stephen Gies teaching on realistically speaking.
Action and dialogue are the two main ways you story writers advance plot. You can make important changes happen in what characters say to each other, as well as what they do while they talk. Dialogue and action combined. Good dialogue is doing even more, such as vividly showing who your characters are. This comes with risk, though, because unrealistic dialogue shatters the illusion conjured by your narration. Realistically speaking, characters speaking realistically helps readers hear conversations in their heads. This helps readers feel their emotions, which is how you can make them care. Today, I'll race through 20 fast pointers for making dialogue feel real. Never stop thinking of new ways to use them. As simple tools, they get the job done. But as your tools, they offer unlimited ways to express your art. After all, dialogue in a story works the same as real life. When we hear someone speak, we look to see who it is, and we listen. Then you have our full attention. Pointer number one, show don't tell. Dialogue is the most common way to turn telling into showing. Nearly always, a scene that involves more than one character can be built around their dialogue. What we learn directly from them, you no longer have to tell us. That frees your narration to paint the visuals around their sound. Still, know when not to overuse dialogue. That's when it's time to, number two, cut to the narrator. Use narration to speed the pace, avoid repetition, and bridge uninteresting, non-critical conversation. For example, in real life, people might spend 10 minutes debating where to eat out, but unless that conversation proves rife with important information that readers need for understanding the story, we don't need to hear your characters have it. If we even need to know about it, you can say, after their customary 10-minute argument about where to eat, Walter gave in yet again, and they headed to her favorite Mexican place. If what matters most is said during dinner, skip to where that conversation offers pizzazz. I've scheduled gender reassignment surgery, she told him over dinner that night at her favorite Mexican place. Still, you do not want to repeat information, no matter how much pizzazz it offers, so, tip number three, avoid dialogue readers already know. No matter how much one character needs to tell something to another, if it's info I already know, I don't want to hear it. You need to vet every line of dialogue to make sure it conveys only new information. If we watch Donna spend all day preparing for the big event, we don't want to hear her spend a page or more telling her friend Cindy what all she did to prepare for the big event. If the information is the same, a good writer will choose which version to share. The narrative description of her preparing, or her dialogue describing it. If the information contradicts, such as what she really did versus what she tells Cindy, a detailed narrative followed by a brief dialogue that highlights the difference will feel natural. Or if Cindy's reactions are also important, or if Donna's telling reveals the most, the narrative is best shorter to save detail for the dialogue. In some cases, they can even be combined. She carefully slipped into the fabulous new gown, desperately hoping for once to stand out. You don't look half bad, Cindy told her at the soiree that night, the closest to a compliment her so-called friend could ever muster. Avoiding unnecessary repeats also helps you keep it tight. Tip number four, keep it tight. Movie and television dialogue have been thoroughly winnowed long before cameras capture the scenes. Even so-called reality programming is edited extensively to show the essential snippets. Try listening to dialogue that is unedited, either what you can overhear or read in something like transcripts. Normal conversation is very wordy and repetitive, with lack of clarity, redundancy, unfinished thoughts, vocal fillers such as well, and entire interactions that communicate nothing important. Yes, people talk that way, and your characters might well want to talk that way, but you should identify no more than a few linguistic quirks that make a character sound unique and, better yet, reveal personality. Then condense long-winded conversation to essential information and sprinkle in those quirks for flavor. A page of dialogue with Sam trying to convince Gus to come on a road trip could be stripped to its basic flavored elements. Gosh darn it, Sam, you'll not bamboozle me into coming on one of your endless rambles down every back road here to the bayou. I know, Gus, which is why this time I'm going to let you drive. Notice that does not have to say whether or not Gus agreed to go. Because, number 5, leave out the obvious. Notice how movies and television tend to omit the chit-chat, such as saying goodbye at the ends of phone calls. You can end the Gus/Sam dialogue with Sam's offer to let Gus drive if the next scene shows them zooming down the road, Gus at the wheel. We know what happened in the rest of the dialogue without needing to hear it. Often you can leave out the beginnings and ends of conversations. If you begin a dialogue with you, no way would I be seen dead at the prom with you. We assume we are joining the conversation after an invitation. By starting at the important information, you can grab readers' attention quicker and keep the story moving with an economy of words. Study this technique in television programming and films, and you will identify countless methods for shortening and tightening the dialogue you write. Number 6. Integrate information. Characters usually know a lot more about each other and themselves than readers know. You need to give readers info, but you don't want to rely on exposition, that clunky practice of stopping a story so the narrator can explain things. Consider this backstory. The reason Gus resists going on a road trip with Sam is because he's tried before, and Sam always insists on driving, which aggravates Gus because he wants to head straight there while Sam is getting worse about being distracted into little adventures. If that two-sentence dialogue example I gave before is used as the opening, it gives backstory. If it is used for the ending, it shows how the characters changed. Did they live happily ever after? Gosh darn it, Sam, you'll not bamboozle me into coming on one of your endless rambles down every back road here to the bayou. I know, Gus, which is why this time I'm going to let you drive. Now beware. Doing this well depends on avoiding the dreaded, as you know. Number 7, avoid as you know. Often, as you knows are more subtle than using those words, but I see those actual words jarringly often. In the real world, people rarely fling that phrase at each other. As you know, Mom, I borrow your car when I can work an extra night shift. Smells like a writer trying to tell readers something Mom already knows. Consider whether or not you think these seem realistic. We've been sharing this bedroom in Mrs. Johnson's foster home since we were little. Or, it took us 3 years to convince the investors to fund our project. Or how about this? That complex nuclear device you built won't work without enriched uranium. All right, and here's another. This will be a second marriage for both of us, ... As you know, and as you know, can be more subtle than even these examples. Practice spotting them in other material you read or watch. Readers notice when dialogue feels fake, even if they don't know why. Don't let an as you know get in the way. Number 8. Avoid don't talk abouts. A close cousin of as you know, don't talk about is a character verbally expressing information the other might not know, but which the first wouldn't naturally say. It shatters the illusion by sounding so fake. Consider this. Why, I think I'll go to the bathroom now, and I might be in there a while. Or, Welcome to the neighborhood. I live in the corner house, but maybe not for long because we're way behind on our mortgage. Or, don't cry, little girl. It's just a tiny boo-boo. Certainly nothing requiring irrigation, suture, and antibiotic prophylaxis. Or, as a park ranger, you know a lot about bears. Yeah, avoid don't talk abouts. Number 9, make each character sound distinct. Study the voice, diction, syntax, lingo, accent, and other distinctive ways of speaking when you hear people in real life as well as through media. At minimum, they tend to follow the patterns of their narrow demographics, race, age, education level, geographic area, personal interests, occupation, but everybody also has unique ways of speaking. Work at making your characters sound distinctive. Then you will need few, if any, attributors or tags. Consider the following lines, not in order, from an urban teen, an Alabama codger, a rich Texas rancher, and a kindergarten girl. You look like the kind of filly to be right pretty riding the limo around a spread. Or, yo, run that, homeboy, you feel me? Should have been had that done. Or, I no want a bug toy, I not like piters. Or, good God almighty, if them fellers ain't lazier than fat cows on a hot snake sunning day. Your story is not ready if all the characters speak the same as the narrator. Avoid syntactic homogeneity, Stephen Gies warns. Dadgummit. However, number 10, minimize dialect. What you want to do with y'all's whatchamacallem dialects is to ease on back and be sprinkling them flavors in not so gall darn much as to distract them readers. Using esoteric words or rearranging words to provide for distinctive syntax goes a long way. Saturating lines with weird spellings and constant contractions or other variances slows reading and shatters the illusion. Skilled writers identify a few of the more flavorful nuances, then insert them just enough to keep readers hearing their way of speaking. Number 11, use italics. English syntax offers some, but not nearly enough, clues about word emphasis. People sing their words, nothing like monotonous computer-generated voices. Although overuse should be avoided, judiciously italicizing words in dialogue helps readers hear and interpret. Consider, don't you dare wear my blanket out in the field. Or, don't you dare wear my blanket out in the field. Or, don't you dare wear my blanket out in the field. Or, don't you dare wear my blanket out in the field. Or, don't you dare wear my blanket out in the field. See, readers will not always hear your dialogue the way you hear it in your head. Skilled writers study their dialogue and anticipate other ways readers might read or misread the words. Then edit for clarity and add italics only when and where emphasis is important. Number 12, use contractions. Do not make me talk without contractions, Emma pleads. It is not normal. I would not talk like that, so you should not either. That is fake. I would sound more real with them. Huh? Frank supports her, saying, don't make Emma talk without contractions. It's not normal. She wouldn't talk like that, so you shouldn't either. That's fake. She'd sound more real with them. Geez was gonna say you wanna let them use confabulated contractions too, but you ain't gonna let that point get by you now, are you? Number 13, control the flow. I'm trying to remember. Oh, I know. Well, I think I know. See, I guess what it all comes down to, what good dialogue comes down to is, you know. He scratched his head, took a deep breath, and said, control the flow. Skilled use of punctuation, pauses, interrupting attributors, interrupting action, fillers, and other methods help finesse how readers hear your speakers. Study how other writers use these techniques as you practice your own. Then expand your capabilities by using the flow of dialogue to control the flow of the story. Build tension with an utterance that struggles to get to the point during an urgent situation. Add shock to a surprise by having characters build up to it, or react after the fact with fractured blurts rather than casual, matter-of-fact utterances. The same group of words can be manipulated to convey any range of emotions, from fear to anger to angst to pain to indifference to shock. Amateurs listen to dialogue in their heads, then dutifully record the words in the right order. Skilled writers listen, read, listen, read, and continually hone those nuances to capture the essence that most readers will ultimately experience. Number 14. Avoid long speeches. Break them up with action, reaction, questions, and responses, whatever will keep readers immersed in all of the scene's elements, picturing everybody present. Enough said. Number 15. Vary attributors. At least one successful novelist brags that he limits his dialogue tags to one. Said. Well, la-dee-da. Yes, geez, harumphed. Attributor variants can be overused, but this technique is an effective tool in the skilled writer's chest. Consider this. He said, I can do that. Or he hesitated, then reluctantly admitted, I can do that. Or, hey, he boasted, I can do that. Or he glanced about, then whispered, I can do that. Painters use more than one color, musicians different keys, writers very specific words. Consider two different ways to say ask. Where were you, the cop questioned. Or where were you, his father demanded. Or where were you, his daughter pleaded. Also consider, Quinn said, everyone went to the store on the other side of town where Sally works, question mark. Readers hear that as a statement until they learn too late it is a question. Just start the sentence with, Quinn asked. Number 16. Minimize adverbs in attributors. Avoid adverbs, he said sternly. Seriously, put words in the characters' mouths that communicate the mood so you can eliminate 98.638% of attributor adverbs. You must follow this important requirement. Avoid adverbs, he repeated, using stern-sounding words. Consider these two words, avoid adverbs. Avoid adverbs, he said pleadingly, versus please, please avoid adverbs for me. Or avoid adverbs, he said demandingly, versus avoiding adverbs is not an option. Please hear this advice as heartfelt, sincere, even caring. Gosh, we want you to be good at this, eh? Number 17. Make proactive and reactive. Weak dialogue sounds like characters are not really listening to each other. Yes, in the real world, you will hear that a lot, such as people nodding impatiently while they wait for a hint of pause so they can barge in with their own comments or a subject change. When your characters need to do this, let them. But don't force them to satisfy your agenda by merely flinging info you want readers to hear. When a character speaks to another, the listener should react to what she heard. For example, if your outline shows a pair brainstorming ideas for solving a problem, you might err in having them take turns spewing unrelated ideas, but to sound realistic and to convey more character information at the same time, the exchange could be shaped by each evaluating the other's ideas. If only briefly. In the real world, when people don't react, the speaker tends to repeat, maybe changing the wording. Reacting and repeating both spend words, so you might as well use reaction as a means to reveal more. Number 18, effect change. The core of nearly all good stories involves one or more characters changing in some important way. Dialogue and action are the top two ways to reveal how they change. Exchanging ideas is interesting, but hearing those ideas change how each interprets the situation is way more interesting. Add some emotion to the reactions, and readers will identify. A conversation that changes the direction of the plot is what storytelling is all about. Number 19, edit. When you think your dialogue is tight, study every line to see if it can be eliminated, shortened, combined, or replaced by briefer narrative bridges. At least some of it needs to go. Seriously. And finally, number 20, read it aloud. Some writers are good at reading aloud in their heads as they quickly notice nuances such as the stumbling awkwardness of the three things they think. Listen to your own dialogue and do not be bashful about asking others to read it aloud. You will hear awkward and unclear portions that can be improved. You will hear misplaced emphasis that can be clarified with italics. You will become a better writer for the effort. Finally, appreciate good dialogue. You now have 20 ways to check your dialogue, tools for refining it, skills that will keep growing throughout your writing career. Practice spotting them in stories you read, which can trigger new variations of your own. Always remember to appreciate entertaining and artful ways of presenting dialogue that still manages to sound realistic. Realistically speaking, let's hope we never get to where we think we have all this down cold. We share a world with billions of brilliant voices singing their ideas at each other, often with words we don't even understand. Just think, if we could create voices that walk comfortably among real people, then we could hear them tell our stories through their dialogue. That would be something to talk about.
Yes, it would. All right, everybody learn something today with these two lessons? Dialogue, that's such an important part to storytelling, but so is creating characters that are believable. You don't want those cookie-cutter one-dimensional characters. You want those characters that are believable and they're speaking real words. Now, before we sign off here this week, remember to go visit geezwriter.com. geezwriter.com, G-E-E-Z, writer.com. And there's all kinds of really cool tips, writing tips, and other authors over there sharing their experiences with writing and publishing and all that good stuff, the difference between writing a novel and short stories. There's just all kinds of really cool stuff over there. geezwriter.com. And don't forget, all these things that Stephen teaches about and then some are in the Geez Writer How-To series found at Amazon. And we do have a caller here, so I'm going to take this call and see what we got going on with this. Hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Stephen Geez. I'm calling from Alabama. And really, I'm just trying to win one of those free Geez Writer books you said you were giving away.
Yeah, I was getting ready to start talking about that here. What we can do with that, even after we sign off, is go to info@freshinkgroup.com and leave your info there and say, hey, I would like one of these books. But before you do that, go over to Amazon and pick the one that you want, because there's a whole series there. Just go over to Amazon, look for Stephen Geez, Geez Writer, How To. And you'll get something out of each of these books. Correct, Mr. G?
Each of these books, too, has quite a bit more than these short little snippets that people are hearing tonight. Like, for example, the dialogue one includes a full, like, short story about teaching dialogue mechanics, how to put the punctuation in there, when to break paragraphs, all that kind of stuff, too. And in today's newsletter, there's a short example of that from that Geez Writer How-To dialogue, too. So check that out in today's newsletter, and if you want to see the whole thing for that, that's in the dialogue one as well.
Cool. All right. Let me check on Twitter here for one last go, and Robert G. Willicroft said, great stuff. Thanks for tuning in, Robert. We always appreciate you out there in the audience. Now that you're here, Mr. G's, you can help me close this out. First of all, I want to mention this too. This past week, I was fortunate and honored to have been interviewed by Zoos Interviews. And you can find that interview at ZuzanneBellek.com. And that's ZuzanneBellek.com. And I'll put that out on Twitter too with the Fresh Ink Group hashtag. But it was just a fun time. And talking a little bit about my own writing journey. And some pointers in there too that work for me. Next week we have Andrea A.K. Wingler. She is the writer of the food truck how-to book. So, hey, we had how-to writings this week. Well, we got how to start your own food truck for next week. And the following week we have Kenneth Lindquist. He is the author of a pair of driver's education teacher's manuals, one for teachers and one for parents, I believe. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, instructor's edition, because the all across the country, all 50 states have different requirements for what you're required to pass, get certified, get licensed or whatever if you want to teach driver's ed. So for people who wanted to do that like as a job, the instructor's edition is the how to get that done. Parents edition, that's just if there's someone you care about and you want to help them learn to be a better driver or learn to drive in the first place, that parents edition is definitely the way to go. There's a lot of overlap in the two books, obviously. So one's just tailored to instructors or instructor wannabes and one to parents. But, man, those are good books. We've really been working hard on those the past couple of months, and those are really cool. Likewise, I want to plug that how to start and run a food truck business in Florida by A.K. Wingler one too, because that's packed with 106 pages full of all kinds of great stuff. Floor plan, you know, for how to lay out your food truck, how to buy the truck, how to get the license, how to plan menu, everything. It's just every aspect. And if you know it's something you want to do, you need this. If it's something you're not sure you want to do, this is the best place to start to find out what's it take, what's involved, what's the cost, how much work is it, and is it worth it? But I'll tell you, it's becoming hot. Like down here in Alabama this week, the local newspaper just ran a major story about an internationally famous chef who's quit his restaurant chain, moved to Alabama, and is starting to outfit food trucks because he wants to go into the food truck business and just do it more independently, more his way, and move around, go to carnivals, events, fairs, county fairs, state fairs.
Yeah, we've got them all over up here out on the street corners and parking lots. I mean, you can get some really great barbecue there, smoked brisket. That's cow's ways. A smoked brisket is a cow's way of saying, I love you, man. Yeah. And you can also get hot dogs, tacos, I mean, chicken wings. There's all kinds of these food trucks all over. And the thing you'll learn with this book is not just as simple as buying a truck and frying up a bunch of chicken wings. And, hey, you want to buy these? There's a lot that goes into it, but this book will give you that step-by-step directions on how to do this without cutting corners and without, you know, making a mess of things. So. Now, before we get out of here, since we got Mr. G's on the line, how are you feeling? Tell the listeners how you're feeling after your neck surgery.
Well, it's been a rough week. I'm trying to deal with pain quite a bit. I generally avoid taking painkillers, so I've had entire days where I'm just trying to find that position that doesn't hurt so much, but I'm making steady progress. I've been able to talk for the last couple of days. For the first 4 or 5 days, I couldn't even hardly talk, but I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to being back in the saddle again in the next couple of days and just putting all this behind me. But I appreciate all the support everybody's given and the well wishes and the notes and the cards and stuff. So while you're at it, go check out that G's Writer How-To series too.
Yeah, G's Writer How-To. And go check out G'sWriter.com. So there's all kinds of, like I said, there's all kinds of really cool stuff at G'sWriter.com. There's several different authors over there. I've got some stuff over there sharing some of my own pointers. Yeah.
We got some great ones too. Harmony Kent.
Kent is over there.
Lizzie Country. I mean, we've even got voice artist Trenton Bennett is over there sharing information about how to produce audiobooks, how to work with a producer, how to work with voice talent and stuff. So it's a writer resource website that's got experts on it and kind of points you toward where you can learn to be superior at your craft. It's a labor of love. It's not a moneymaker or anything. It's just out there because we care about authors and we care about hooking people up with good advisors, people who know what they're doing and have good ideas to share.
Indeed. All right. So I think we're going to call it a night on this episode. Again, next week, A.K. Wingler, and the following week, Kenneth Lindquist. And we will let you know who is after that. We've got some people lined up, and we're going to be making some phone calls and bringing some other people in here. So we will see everybody again next week at the same time. Want to say goodbye, Stephen?
Yeah, and remind them, get over there and check out that trailer for the food, How to Start a Food Truck Business, too, that we
We've got a new video trailer up there. So get over to YouTube channel for Fresh Ink Group. Just go to YouTube, type in Fresh Ink Group. We've got a playlist for all of the trailers, and we've got a separate playlist for all of these episodes that you listen to here on the Voice of Indy podcast. And just go over there and hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Hit the like button. That helps us let us know that the hard work we're putting into a lot of the shows and in these videos, that is being appreciated. And that's what we like. We just like to know that it's being appreciated. So we will talk to everybody again next week.
Thanks,
bye, everybody.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.